The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Coming up today, Jeff meets with newsmakers, shares breaking news, spotlights top community activities and leaders. He'll keep you ahead of the news and informed as you make your way home today. So join Jeff Davis right here, right now, and every day at 5. So stay tuned and you'll have something to talk about over dinner tonight with Hawaii's Tomorrow today. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow today.
Aloha! Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. My name is Braden DeVos. I'm 7 years old, and I have a favor to ask you. Will you please protect the environment for me and the other children in the world? Thank you. Now take it, Solar Guy.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your Marine Science Gal on this Tuesday, November 19th, and today we are going to be talking about Makai Watch. For those of you who are not familiar with the state's Makai Watch program, these programs help aid state management of nearshore marine resources by providing community members opportunities to become directly involved. DLNR officially partnered with NGOs to launch the Makai program in 2005, so Makai Watches have been around quite a while now and focus on caring for our nearshore marine resources with active participation from the local communities. Modeled after neighborhood watch programs, Makai Watch volunteers in communities serve as the eyes and ears for the state. Today we have four invested and important members of the Makai Watch family talking with us about this important program. Up first with us today is Ann Rosinski, the NOAA Coral Fellow, who is based at the Division of Aquatic Resources. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so happy to have you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about the Makai Watch programs and what their goals are?
Sure. The Makai Watch program is a way for communities in Hawaii to get directly involved in natural resource management. And like you just said, they do that through being the eyes and ears of DOCARE. So they look out for marine resource violations. They also participate in outreach and biological and human use monitoring.
And how did you get involved with the Makai Watch programs? I know you are a NOAA Fellow. What exactly does that entail?
So the NOAA Coral Fellowship is a position with the NOAA Coral Reef Conservation Program. And there's actually 7 different coral fellows. We're placed in all of the U.S. coral reef jurisdictions. So that's just areas in the U.S. that have large coral reef areas. So, for example, there's fellows in the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, Florida, Guam, American Samoa, CNMI, and Tierra in Hawaii. So I represent the fellowship here. And we get placed in a local agency, so I'm working at the Division of Aquatic Resources. And it's a really great program because the fellowship projects actually fill the specific jurisdiction's needs, so we fill that capacity gap during our 2 years as a fellow.
And what do you do with the Makai Watch programs in particular? Are you on the ground staff and support, or are you coming up with new placements for the programs?
Yeah, I've been mainly playing a coordination role and also doing some of the on-the-ground work that's going to help us create a stronger program overall. So the first project that I became involved with was to actually reach out to our different Makai Watch communities. And I was asking them about their experiences and some of their lessons learned with the biological monitoring component, what their interests are, and the particular resources that they're concerned with.
So just diverting a little, what are some of the lessons learned, or what have been the most positive or important points that you've gained from talking to the community?
Yeah, the interviews were really interesting. Reached out to communities on Kauai, Oahu, Maui, and Big Island, and it was really great because we learned that all of those communities are really interested in monitoring their nearshore marine resources. The types of things that they're monitoring really differed. So some of the communities are interested in fish or human impacts or other resources like opihi or limu and things like that. And actually, the main lesson learned was that we're going to take all of the feedback that we got from those communities and build it back into the Makai Watch program in the form of a new curriculum that I'm developing now.
That's amazing. And what is this curriculum about?
So the curriculum is basically going to be strengthening our awareness raising and outreach component. So that's where community members and Makai Watch volunteers will go out in their communities and talk about these marine resource issues. And so the idea with the curriculum was to gain input from folks at the Division of Aquatic Resources and also at DOCARE, so that's the enforcement branch, and we're going to try to find those answers to all of the why questions that they get frequently asked, and as well as our Makai Watch volunteers. So, for example, you know, why do we have protected areas in one place and not in another, or why are the fisheries rules and regulations the way they are? We're going to be covering those types of topics, and the overall goal of it is just so we all have a unified message when we're going out there and talking to folks that might not know that information. Can be really helpful for new volunteers, and I'm also hoping that it'll just help all of us become more, you know, have a more intimate understanding of these complex topics.
That sounds like really important work, and I think having a unified voice is important, especially on a lot of the fisheries and more controversial topics that you guys get approached with.
Absolutely.
So they do a lot of community work and talking to the community and outreach, but there's also a lot of monitoring involved. And how does that work? What type of monitoring do community volunteers do with the Makai Watch programs?
Yeah, you know, we really leave it to the communities to define for themselves what is important to track over time. So, you know, as I was talking to a lot of the Makai Watch groups, it was evident that they really take this component and make it their own. So they have to do some, you know, inner soul searching within their community and pick those topics or marine resource issues that they want to track over time and really make it their own.
So you said you're going to be doing some curriculum as well. Are there plans to do more with the Makai Watch programs?
Yeah, definitely. You know, with the curriculum, we want to incorporate it into Makai Watch training. So that's a way where we can get all the groups together and go over the basic information that they need to know as a Makai Watch group. And then I also hope to build in some more experiential learning activities. So we won't hope to cover all of it in just, you know, a training, but we really want to get people out in the coastal area talking about these issues.
And this Makai Watch program is only one piece of what you do as a coral fellow, and you were telling me before the show starts that you're involved in a lot of other programs. How does this differ from other community watch programs like the Eyes of the Reef?
Right. So, yeah, I'm also involved with the Eyes of the Reef program, which is part of a larger rapid response plan that the state has to respond to coral bleaching, disease, and crown of thorns events. And it's similar to Makai Watch in the way that it does help communities to get involved in management issues, but it's a little bit different. So Eyes of the Reef is actually a reporting network. So there is an initial training where we show citizens and communities, whoever is interested in how to spot these types of events. And then it's up to them to, when they actually see something, they report it in to a network. So yeah, it's a little different than Makai Watch.
So for our listeners that don't spend a lot of time on the water, when you say reporting issues like crown of thorns, I assume you're not talking about fishermen wearing crowns with thorns on them. Do you want to share with our listeners what exactly that means?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny name, but the crown of thorns starfish is a type of invertebrate, type of starfish, and it eats coral. And so it's actually a natural part of the environment here in Hawaii, but in other areas, specifically in the Pacific, it can actually, they can grow in numbers. And when that happens, they can eat large areas of coral reef. So it's just something that we want to continue to monitor. And, you know, it's really helpful when people are out there diving. If they see them in very, very large numbers, then that's something that we want to know.
Because they've been very destructive in other island and coral communities, especially in the Caribbean. Have we had much outbreaks here in the Pacific?
We've had a couple of, I would say, smaller scale outbreaks in Hawaii. But we have had larger outbreaks in Australia on the Great Barrier Reef. They've done quite a bit of damage. And also in American Samoa, one of our other U.S. coral jurisdictions.
Well, I'm excited to hear more about what Makai Watch is doing and all these community programs that you're involved with. And thank you so much for coming onto the show. We will take a quick traffic break, but when we come back, we are going to chat with Liz Foote, who's doing some amazing community work in Maui.
Thank you so much.
760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
No major problems right now. No accidents or stalls on any of our major roads. If you're going west, the H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. The Moana Lewis slows at Fort Chapter Flats. Inbound traffic from the west is slow from the Middle Street merge to the Poly exit. Drive east to Hawaii Kai is fine, and the drive over to the windward side is fine on the Poly, the Likelike, and the H3.
Aloha, this is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. Do you want free 5 panels? How about a free trip to Vegas? I know, free financing. Then don't call me. For 25 years, Kameyama Solar believes in treating our clients with respect. We do not subcontract. We do not offer anything for free, besides Aloha. What we do offer is hands-on installation with 25 years of experience and a 10-year workmanship warranty. Call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200. Aloha at 554-7200.
Aloha no hoi kako and ho mai kai no hoi praise to Jeff Davis.
You're terrible.
I'm terrible.
I love you, Ruby. Aloha. Aloha, this is your solar guy, Jeff Davis here. If you have any questions regarding HECO's new regulations for photovoltaics or solar electric in your neighborhood, as you know, they have new rules. Just call me at 554-7200. I'll answer your questions most likely right over the phone, 554-7200. And please don't forget, solar hot water, solar-powered pool pumps, solar heating, all that is good to go. I can handle any of those questions as well. Call your solar guy at 554-7200. Aloha. Hi, it's Jeff. Aloha. It seems as though Hawaiian Electric has made their decision to slow down photovoltaic solar electric installation throughout this last tax season. Many people have turned to battery storage systems to save money on the upgrades and to beat the tax season. These battery storage systems are standalone. You're not connected to the grid. You do receive this year's tax credits for them, and you can install them in any area on the island at any time. It's a fantastic idea. Now, I'm Kamiyama Solar, and we've installed many of these systems in the past. If you have any questions for me, they can be answered generically with a phone call. So go ahead and get to me, Jeff Davis, your solar guy, regarding battery storage systems for your photovoltaics this year at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. Aloha.
Hi, I'm Frank Rogers from Leakmaster Roofing and the Cool Roof Store. We sell and install protective roof coatings for all types of roofs. What kind of roof do you have? For flat roofs, we recommend silicone roof coatings because they withstand unlimited ponding water and they come with a 50-year material warranty. We feature trusted names like Geico, NXT Cool Zone, and Apoc Silicone with some of the lowest prices in town. If you have a Monier roof or a metal roof, we recommend that you recoat them with NXT Cool Zone to make them shine like new. Asphalt shingles can be protected and waterproof for the lifetime of your home with the Cool Roof Store's ceramic coating. Whether you want Leakmaster Roofing to install the coating or want to do it yourself, come on down to our store in Kaka'ako or visit us at leakmaster.com. Why re-roof when you can simply recoat?
My name is Braden DeVos, and I believe in education. I say get one. Take it, solar guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. With us now is Liz Foote. Liz is the Kanapali Makai Watch Coordinator and everyday community guru for the Coral Reef Alliance. Liz is a dear friend of mine who I have the pleasure of working with for many years. Liz, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you all the way from Maui. How you doing?
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on the program and letting me call in.
Oh, I'm so stoked that you're on the air today. And Liz, you do a million things. It's going to be hard to talk about just one of them. But can you tell us a little bit about your Makai Watch program and what you have going on there in Maui?
Sure. So I'm one of the co-coordinators of the Anapali Makai Watch program, along with Darla White and the Sysnam Aquatic Resources team here. And our program was actually established to support the Kahakili Herbivore Fisheries Management Area in Kanapali and West Maui. I'll just say KHMA from here on out. That's way too many words. So the idea behind the site is to protect sea herbivores, and herbivores meaning animals that eat seaweed or algae or limu. So essentially they're the vegetarians of the ocean. So examples of those that are protected in the site, relatively small site, are parrotfishes or uhu, sturgeonfishes like manini, rudderfishes like inui, and also sea urchins. And we care about protecting these guys because they play a really important role as grazers and eating the seaweed. When there's nutrient pollution making its way onto the reef from land and our activities on land, then the algae can grow out of hand and outcompete the coral and ultimately take the system from a healthy one that supports all sorts of diversity to a stressed or degraded one that doesn't. So the cage for me, it's really a new and experimental approach, and the management concept tries to take into account the need to focus both Malka and the Mapai. So while we're addressing our impact on land, you know, doing what we can with conservation strategies on land, we're also doing what we can in the water to promote herbivores in this area. So hopefully, you know, they can do their job and hold the line while we're while the area can recover. So that's a little bit about the background of the area, and where our program comes in is helping to promote voluntary compliance with the rules and regulations in this area. They're really unique. Essentially having no tainted herbivores and also no fish feeding. So it's a little hard to understand and to enforce. And as we all know, our enforcement agency, NOCARE, could certainly use the assistance from the community. So what we have going is a volunteer program that enlists people to help get the word out about the area, and why it's important, why the rules exist, and why it's important that we follow them. Also about reef etiquette and help the resource managers collect monitoring data as well through in-water surveys that DARA coordinates.
So, Liz, over here on Oahu, we have quite a problem with invasive algae outbreaks, and we see a lot of these areas where limu just takes over the reef. Was there a limu outbreak that sparked this Makai Watch or this herbivore program, or what was the idea behind it?
Well, the KHMA was established after, you know, long series of observations and data that's been collected. Algae blooms have been happening in the region going back a while, and you know, there's many causes of the algae blooms, but primarily they're concerned about the input of treated wastewater effluent in this region. So there were a lot of studies and ultimately kind of determined that has been an impact as well as many other things. So the idea is let's bolster the herbivore populations, and you know, as we work on reducing wastewater input, reusing water on land, reclaiming the water, we hope that will be an efficient strategy.
And you mentioned about fish feeding, and so I'm going to have to pick up on that a little bit, because you know that is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. Have you found that a lot of the tourists and companies that do snorkeling in that area have been fairly compliant with not fish feeding, and do the tourists that don't fish feed, do they understand why? Is that part of your outreach program?
Yeah, it is actually. That being part of the rule package is prohibiting fish feeding because, again, these herbivores, they need to eat, focus on eating the algae, the limu. And, you know, over the years, as, you know, for those who aren't aware, Carly was one of our coordinators, or our main coordinator for our Take a Bite Out of Fish Feeding campaign, and helped us really get the word out about this practice and why it's detrimental. People not only get bitten, but there is the ecological impact that we've talked about. And over the years, we've seen a lot of the businesses get on board and understand through, you know, outreach efforts and, you know, getting science out there and also concern for the safety of their clients. However, we still see people who aren't informed. They can slip through the cracks and make their way out into the reef with a bag of peas or bread or what have you. And so we do have outreach strategies that address fish feeding, and our awesome volunteer team is often on site to be able to gently educate those people about why that's not a good idea.
And what about the hotels? I mean, I know that area that you work in, there are quite a few of them, and you've been getting involved with them more and more. How are they supporting your program?
Well, the hotels in the region have been great, and we've been working with a number of them in the Ka'anapali region, actually statewide, but more focused in this area within the Makai Watch context. Our efforts have focused on promoting reef stewardship and sustainability initiatives, informing them about the KHMA, and promoting events they can get involved with, and more recently, we've expanded the scope of our work a bit to include more Maquoketa-Mackay watershed stewardship themes and promoting improved water quality. We've also been involved with developing some tools and resources as guidance for a number of these properties as they have to start transitioning to using reclaimed water, recycled water for their landscaping, in future years. And they participated in events, and they hosted their own events, and they, adopted some of our outreach materials, and particularly the reef etiquette sign, which we just, through this respecting coral reef sign that you may have seen, there's only a few on Oahu, and you'll hear from Jenny in a moment, one of the first adopters is one over there, but having the signage available for visitors has been really key, and hotels have been out front in sponsoring the signs, installing them on their property so they can get the key information about some of the important reef etiquette tips so that people can reduce their impact and also learn about the reef too in an engaging way.
And I think one of the really neat strengths of the Coral Reef Alliance and the Mackay Watch program over there is it's not that you guys are just naysayers, no, you can't feed the fish, no, you can't do this. You guys have a lot of really fun events. I mean, I see you posting Facebook pictures all the time, and you guys are doing so much out there. Can you tell us about some of the really fun and engaging events that you guys do on the weekends?
Oh, sure. Well, we do a number of things as far as, engaging and listing people, events on site. We do a lot of things at Kapi'olii Beach Park. We've partnered with the hotels to have outreach stations. We have volunteers that are just out and about as sort of roving educators. They're just awesome in getting the word out sort of independently and informally. But we have done a number of things that I managed to post all over Facebook and that are high profile and events like Earth Day. But every year we've started doing, since the second anniversary of the KHMA, we started having a birthday party for it. So we thought, let's just celebrate the anniversary of its establishment and have a big party and get people out there and try to make it fun and infuse some educational themes in the events. This year was the fourth anniversary of the site, and we expanded the scope of it so that we could have a Maquoketa-Mackay theme and work with the West Maui Ridge to Reef Initiative and the West Maui Kumuwai campaign, in addition to Vision Aquatic Resources, to just take it to the next level. So you may have seen on the front page of Maui News that the outcomes of a seaweed-eating contest that we did. That was new, and the point of it was to do something fun and engaging, but also convey some messages about herbivory and the importance of herbivory. So, and that's one of the things we did at the event. We have our standard things that, like outreach with different groups that are on hand and reef tours, getting in the water, showing people what healthy versus degraded reef looks like, some opportunities to do some water quality monitoring. We had a culinary contest, so not based on how things tasted, but decorating cakes and various food products to have a theme of Maquoketa-Mackay and Mr. Reef stewardship and limu, things like that. We had groups doing crafts for kids, and we had prize drawings and food. So it's a lot of fun, and we try to make it accessible and inclusive for everybody.
I'm so glad you mentioned that food contest, because when I saw those cupcakes with the opihi and the vana on them, I was like, that is amazing. I want to be at that event. And I think, that's really important because it allows you to engage with the community. Have you learned as you've gone along with this project over time, and have you started to see more community engagement as people become more familiar with the area?
Yeah, and, more people are learning about it. Initially, it was an uphill battle because it's a small area. It's got its own sort of very distinct set of rules. So the point of getting the word out, it's difficult. But it's great that we have an awesome team of education outreach volunteers, and they've been out front talking with people at the site. They've also taken on this project they developed that we're calling the Adopt the Box program. So they're able to put information in these stainless steel boxes. Over time, they realized that the DLNR signs weren't as engaging, but attaching colorful laminated information to them brought people in. So it sort of morphed into this whole thing where now these boxes can hold the key information laminated on top of them as sort of signs in them themselves, but also the rules and regs. So we've got this team of box parents that sort of caretake the boxes and make sure everything's stocked. And they're out front, they're talking to people, so they're able to have a handle on who's accessing the site, have they heard of the area, are they aware of the rules. So, of course, we're finding people who do come and they don't really know about the site, but over time we are seeing a lot more people who are aware of it, and through a lot of the social media efforts, it's hard for a lot of people to not hear about it after a while as well.
Well, I'm sure with you on the case, you will have all of Maui involved and doing hands-on work. Liz, we are going to take a quick traffic break, but thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. Stay tuned, though. We are going to chat more Makai Watch right after a word from our sponsors.
KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Got one new accident just reported a few minutes ago. It's in town, Beritania Street, by the main police station. No problems on the freeways. Looks pretty normal. Your drive time home should be good. The H1 going west slows on the airport viaduct. The Moana Lewis slows at the gardens. No problems to Hawaii Kai, and we're looking good to the windward side on all three highways.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to my dad, the solar guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis. You know, I'm offering you folks a chance to get an education, this time about on-bill financing. You've heard about the new bill the governor signed, paying for your photovoltaic system on your electricity bill. As you may know, the governor just signed this revolutionary bill, and it is directed and aimed at folks that have no ability to find the upfront money for their photovoltaic purchase. If you have questions, you can always call me or attend my seminar. Get a hold of me at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. And aloha.
So you're doing the right thing. You're getting a solar voltaic system for your home or business. But did you know the crucial decision is which microinverter to choose? A microinverter is what's going to convert the sunshine from your solar panels into electricity you can use.
But not all microinverters are created equal.
The Enexis microinverter system dramatically boosts energy harvest with higher wattage microinverters. We're talking up to 40% over its competitors. Year after year, you'll be getting more bang for your buck.
Because not all microinverters are created equal.
So make sure your contractor offers the Enexis microinverter with the system you can monitor yourself. Your system will shine today and be ready for a brilliant tomorrow. For more information, visit enexis.com. That's enexis.com. E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com. That's E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. Moving from Kanapali, Maui, back to Oahu, we have Jenny Yagodich here to talk to us about the Pupukea Marine Life Conservation District and their Makai Watch program. Jenny, are you with us?
I'm here. Aloha, Carly.
Aloha. Thanks for calling in. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you. Mahalo for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Why don't you start by telling us about Pupukea MLCD and where exactly it is located for those of us who don't know.
Sure. So the Marine Life Conservation District is an area designed to conserve and replenish marine resources. They provide fish and other aquatic life with a protected area in which they can grow and reproduce. And the Pupukea Marine Life Conservation District is located out here on the beautiful north shore of Oahu. It starts at Kulalua Point at Pupukea, known as Shark's Cove. It extends west through Kalua'amaua, known as Three Tables. And then it covers all of Waimea Bay all the way to the Wananapa'oa Islets on the west side of the bay. It's about a mile of coastline, and the district extends about 100 yards out to the sea from each point.
And how long has the Pupukea Makai Watch program been running?
Malama Pupukea Waimea, which is the name of our nonprofit organization, originally formed in 2005 with a mission to help replenish and sustain the natural and cultural resources of the area through active community stewardship, education, and partnerships. We actually became the first Makai Watch program on Oahu at that time in 2005. And since then, we've expanded our reach in our community with the addition of a marine science for youth program called Kapapa Kai, which educates our next generation of ocean-wise keiki.
So you guys are kind of the grandfather Makai Watch program that all the other ones are modeling after.
You know, we love to help the other groups in that way, for sure. We've gone through a lot of learning processes, so we're happy to help where we can.
And what are some of the things you've learned over time that you've sort of imparted or shared with the other Makai Watch programs?
You know, basically the big question that comes up is how do you reach your community? And I think that through trial and error, we have realized, you know, which methods work best for us. And so we're able to sort of share that information. I feel like that's probably the most useful information that we're able to share.
And Pupukea is a fairly popular spot. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with Shark's Cove. It's a huge recreation area, not only for tourists, but for our local communities. Is it difficult to run a Makai Watch program in such a high-use area?
You know, the simple answer to that is yes. It is, because our coastline is a little bit different than other areas. We're accessible from any point along that mile of stretch coastline. So you can pull up in your car and basically walk from your car down to the ocean at any spot along the way. And because of that, it's almost next to impossible to reach every person and to educate every person about the rules of the Marine Life Conservation District.
And so because there's such a big area and so many people, I imagine education events are fairly important. Is this something you do with the community? Is it different than how the Maui program that we just heard from Liz? Do you guys have birthday bashes, or what kind of things do you do with your community?
You know, I've learned that each community is very different, and what works for some may not work for others. We do hold various formal training events throughout the year, but we've learned that we are more effective when we talk to our community one-on-one in a casual way. So we spend a lot of our time educating about the rules of the MLCD so that they know what is allowed and what is not. And then what we try to do is empower them to call DOCARE when they see a valid violation. So we have to actually, you know, physically walk up to people in our community who are beachgoers or using the area for other purposes and just talk story with them and just, you know, explain to them what it is, ask them if they know about it, explain the rules, and then, like I said, empower them to sort of feel like they also can help be a part of the solution.
Now, are there more people that work with the nonprofit, or is it just you going out and talking to the community? I hope you have a little bit of help there.
Well, with our organization, we're completely a volunteer-based organization, with the exception of myself, who's a part-time paid employee, full-time volunteer, part-time paid. We do have a team of extremely dedicated volunteers, and we have a wonderful board of directors who also dedicate a ton of time. We actually set up our outreach tent at Shark's Cove every Saturday, and so those are the days that our volunteers are there, and they sort of scour the area and talk story with people. We have this great little card that we've printed up that has a map of the Marine Life Conservation District on one side, and then the other side it has the number to call if they see a violation, and so we pass out a lot of that kind of information. So sort of, yeah, it's on the ground and a lot of one-on-one.
And I know you're working as a nonprofit, but you also work very closely with the state, with DOCARE and Division of Aquatic Resources, DLNR. How does the community respond to working with the state? Has this been a positive relationship?
You know, for the most part, our community understands and respects the role of DLNR in the state. I believe that in the past there's been some tension there, but we continually try to improve that relationship. There's always a few who feel they should be able to do what they want when they want, despite the rules. But we're working hard to help bridge the gap between that attitude and the enforcement efforts of DoCare. We feel passionately about protecting our marine resources, and we're supported by the majority of our community. We actually recently held an event to celebrate the 30th year of the Marine Life Conservation District, and DoCare was there participating with an outreach tent where folks could, from the community could come up to them and talk to them and, you know, make face with them and find out what they do and why they do. You know, I personally enjoy working with them, and I know they have a tough job. We're really pleased with their efforts to work with us as well. And we all agree that by working together, Mackay Watch will surely continue to be a good success for us.
Well, 30 years is a very long time. That is a huge accomplishment. And have you seen many changes over those 30 years? I know you're saying that there seems to be more people on board with the program now and interested in assisting. But what other changes have you seen ecologically or in terms of attitudes towards the Mackay Watch program?
Oh, I've definitely seen changes. I actually grew up out here in these same waters, and I remember how it was, you know, 20, 25 years ago. And there's definitely been an improvement since Mackay Watch formed. Sharks Cove and Three Tables have been a part of that MLCD for 30 years. Waimea was added a little bit later. But a lot of people in our community say that they only learned about the fact that it's a marine life conservation district recently, you know, since Mackay Watch formed and started educating everyone. And that's good news for us because it lets us know that we're succeeding in our mission.
And do you think that the community wants more, or what do you think the community is asking for in terms of the Mackay Watch and protection for future resource?
You know, there's always a few in the community who don't agree with a marine life conservation district. Those typically tend to be commercial fishermen. And, you know, there's the ones that come and visit our area that aren't necessarily from here, and they have the attitude that, you know, no area should be a protected area, that they should be able to do, you know, whatever they want when they want. But those voices are few, and the vast majority of our community wants to see our marine resources protected. There are many avid fishermen and divers who completely support what we do. They tell us all the time that the Marine Life Conservation District is working, that the spillover effect is happening, and that they're glad the North Shore is home to a protected area. So overall, our community wants to see our marine ecosystem thrive.
And what do you think is the biggest issue that the Pupukea Mackay Watch program or the region itself faces?
You know, the biggest issue I feel that we have out here would be poaching. Despite our efforts to continually educate about it, there's just folks who want to violate the rules. And you may sometimes when we approach folks to try to educate them or do what we call an intervention, some folks just don't know that it is a protected area. So we try our best to educate all types of visitors. One of the hugest issues we have in addition to that is human use. Like you said earlier, our area is extremely popular. Because of its accessibility, especially in the summer, with some of the best snorkeling and diving conditions around, we see literally thousands of people coming and using the area for recreation and for commercial purposes. And what's happening at Shark Cove in particular is we have a very serious erosion problem that we're currently trying to address. So there's lots of issues, but again, we're really hopeful, and lately things have just been looking up.
And you mentioned something that's really interesting that I think most places don't really have to deal with is you have a huge contrast between your marine environment you're working with in the summer versus the winter. And
yes.
I mean, with the big waves, how does that impact how you manage and how you work with the community? Because that's got to shift the use a little bit.
It really, really does. So basically what happens is in the summertime, it's flat like a lake. It's literally like swimming in a fish tank. It's like going through the aquarium and getting in. And when it's like that and when the conditions are safe, even a beginner swimmer can get in the water with a mask and snorkel and enjoy the area. It just gets completely overused. It's amazing to see. But then when the weather switches, we get 50-foot surf pounding into the area. So what happens for our efforts, because we do our Saturday outreaches year-round, in the summer we're talking more about conservation, reef etiquette, like Liz mentioned earlier, you know, how to have tonal practices in the ocean. We're educating about species. We're, you know, just basically trying to keep everyone with a conscious mind about their impact that they're leaving on the ocean. In contrast, in the wintertime, what we're really talking about is how to stay safe around the ocean. Visitors do come, and it looks really pretty with the waves crashing against the rocks, and they want to walk out there. So a lot of times we're having to educate about just general ocean knowledge and how to be safe around the ocean.
Well, safety is very important. And on that note, we will wish everybody a safe winter season.
Yes.
And thank you so much, Jenny, for calling in. We really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about 30-year-old Pupukea MLCD. That is awesome.
Oh, well, mahalo for having me.
Mahalo. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors have been so interested in the Makai Watch program, I've completely forgot to acknowledge Leak Master Roofing, Kamayama Solar, Grand Solar, BenQ Solar, University of Hawaii Research Corp, State of Hawaii Natural Energy Lab, Kona. We will continue talking Makai Watch in just a few moments.
KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
If you're coming into town from the west side, expect slow traffic as you get to the Middle Street merge on either freeway. It's going to be slow from there on the H1 eastbound until you get to the downtown exit. If you're going west, the H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. The Moana Lua slows at Fort Shafter Flat. No problems going over to the windward side, and we're looking normal going out to Hawaii Kai.
Aloha. If you would like to work with Jeff and Kamiana Solar in a sales position, Jeff is hiring qualified people for full or part-time positions. Please call Jeff at 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha, this is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. Do you want free 5 panels? How about a free trip to Vegas? I know, free financing. Then don't call me. For 25 years, Kamiyama Solar believes in treating our clients with respect. We do not subcontract. We do not offer anything for free. Besides Aloha. What we do offer is hands-on installation with 25 years of experience and a 10-year workmanship warranty. Call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200. Aloha at 554-7200.
My name is Braden Navas, and I believe in education. I say get one. Take it, solar guy.
Welcome back. Today we have been talking about the impressive Makai Watch program. Our last guest today is Luna Kekoa, the Makai Watch Program Coordinator based out of DoCare, DLNR. Welcome to the show, Luna.
Hello, Cardi.
Save the best for last. Mm-hmm. Now, listening to all these successful Makai Watch programs today, how does that make you feel?
You know, it's good to see communities actively engaged with their areas and their resources. And like Jenny said, passing on the knowledge to the next generation so that they become the stewards for their areas and their resources. It kind of makes me think, like, what's next? How can we make the program better? As the State Makai Watch Coordinator, there's always gaps that need to be connected, and it's my job to bridge those gaps, to mediate and facilitate the relationships between the communities, with the DLNR, as well as other state agencies and partnering program and sponsors.
And you're the perfect man for this position. I mean, you're an old hat. How long have you been working with the program for?
So my first experience with Makai Watch was in 2005. I got to attend a Makai Watch training as part of the E'alupu network. So the E'alupu is a group of coastal communities. There's about 20 to 25 of them that work with their coastal and marine resources. And later on, I was hired by the organization that helped support that. It was formerly Community Conservation Network, and now it's Kua Aina Ulu Awamo, or Kua for short. While I was with them, I was able to work on the Big Island with the communities of Hokena, Honanau, and sometimes Miloli'i. And then 3 years later, I moved to Maui. I became the Noah Coral Fellow, and I helped to co-coordinate, along with Liz and Darla, the Ka'anapali Makaiwatch. And now I am the State Makaiwatch Coordinator.
Must be amazing to see all these programs grow. And, you know, it requires a lot of manpower and effort. Where does the funding for all of this come from?
So Makaiwatch funding is provided through site program sponsors. So different organizations sponsor Makaiwatches. So, for instance, Pupukea is sponsored by the Malama Pupukea Waimea Nonprofit. Ka'anapali, which is Liz folks, they're sponsored by the Coral Reef Alliance. So this is one of the requirements of Makaiwatches moving forward, is that they have this sponsoring organization. And that's just to help provide assistance for technical or monitoring support, as well as grant writing and management of those grants so that they can get those fundings.
Amazing. And how has that been, a big struggle, or has it been pretty successful thus far?
Most of those communities that do have those sponsoring agencies are still active in the Makaiwatch program, and they have been able to move forward with that support. So that being said, because it's such a critical piece to have moving forward, it is a requirement for Makaiwatch communities to have that sponsoring organization.
And earlier in the show, Anne talked about standardizing the program. She touched on that a bit. Why is it important to do this across all the Makaiwatch programs?
Okay, so kind of to understand why we were moving towards standardizing the program. Back when Laura Thielen was the chair of DLNR, there was some money that was collected from a coral damage case. And she wanted to disperse that money to the Makaiwatch communities. And during this process was when it was discovered that Makaiwatch communities across the state were not consistent, meaning some of those Makaiwatch organizations had nonprofit sponsorships. So they were able to accept monies from different organizations. However, some of our Makaiwatch communities were more grassroots, and they didn't have that nonprofit support and weren't able to take that money. So a portion of that money was used to start standardizing the Makaiwatch program. And along with the Makaiwatch Advisory Group, the enforcement agency, these observation and incident reporting standards were developed and eventually led to the creation of a Makaiwatch strategy.
So these reporting and monitoring programs that all the Makaiwatches have, are they looking at the same things, or do they look at different types of species and different types of activities?
Okay, so that's like a two-part question. The monitoring part, every community, like Anne said earlier in the show, every community is special. They're unique. So they have their own resources that they monitor for. So the community down in Ho'okena, they might want to look at Manini, whereas in Ha'ena, they're looking at Moi. So they all have what they monitor for. It's kind of like what is good for their area. And then you have the observation and incident reporting. So that is more of a standardized process. And across the state, we're trying to make that so that every Makaiwatch reports the same way to the Division of Conservation and Resource Enforcement. And that helps to just streamline the process and make it easier to communicate. So if everybody's reporting the same way, then DoCare can report back to the communities and get it back and just have this working relationship that is standardized.
And I imagine if you standardize too, then you're able to get tallies or counts for the entire state for all of the Makaiwatch programs. Has that initiative been done at all yet?
As of right now, not really. But building into this program, we're looking at evaluating the program. So we are looking at how can we take statistics, how can we gather information and show that the Makaiwatch is an effective program in the state.
Well, it's a very good program, and I definitely would love to volunteer and be involved, but I will not be doing your statistics. How many programs are there? I mean, we've talked to Liz, who's at Ka'anapali, and we talked to Jenny at Pupukea. It seems like there are on all islands Makaiwatch programs?
So as of right now, when Makaiwatch started out, there was communities that wanted to become Makaiwatches. And slowly over the years, some of those Makaiwatch organizations have dissolved. As part of the Makaiwatch strategy moving forward, we are going to be working with 8 communities, and those are Puako and Ka'upulehu on Hawaii Island. On Maui, we have Ka'anapali and the Communities Fisheries Enforcement Unit, which is based in Pa'ia to Wailuku side. You also have, here on Oahu, we have Pupukea and Mauna Lua. And then on Kauai, we have Hanalei and Haena.
So you guys are keeping yourselves very busy then. And how does the community get involved in these programs? Let's say a listener today wants to get engaged with one of the communities you listed.
So, I mean, communities become involved for their own reasons, whether it be wanting to teach the next generation, wanting to protect and conserve their marine resources, to know like what the water quality is in the area. So every community has their own reasons for getting involved. But moving forward, Makaiwatch communities are going to have requirements that they need to meet in order to become a Makaiwatch program. And that's just because of the Makaiwatch strategy. We're trying to make or create an official state Makaiwatch program that will be funded and supported by the DLNR.
And when people volunteer to work with these community Makaiwatches, do they get trained, and how intense is that training?
Okay, so when those observation and incident reporting standards were created, that was back in 2010. So those were developed further into a training curriculum. And that training curriculum was taken to Hawaii Island, Maui, Oahu, and Kauai. So those communities were able to be trained in this observation and incident reporting. As Anne spoke earlier, there's that awareness raising and outreach curriculum that is being developed. That will also be a requirement for the volunteers to go through. As part of this new Makaiwatch that we're starting to unfold, Makaiwatch volunteers are going to have to go through the volunteer training and also complete a test as well as a practical exam. So like in the field, take them out into the field, see if they know the boundaries and how did they work with interacting.
So it sounds like you have a lot of standardization and evaluation coming up for all of these programs. Are there any other future steps for the program as a whole?
Like I said, the Makaiwatch strategy is being implemented right now. So one of the steps is to streamline that process with the DLNR. So making sure that communications both ways work, as well as creating an official Makaiwatch program within the state. So that's making sure that the Makaiwatch programs meet the legal requirements, meet the liability requirements, all these state requirements that need to be done in order to have a state program. So it's taking those requirements back to the community, working with them so that they can meet those requirements to become an official state Makaiwatch program.
Well, you have a very busy job, Lena, and you sounds like you are doing a fantastic, amazing work with all of those different programs. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And thank you to all of our guests who have spoken so frankly about such an important community program. I'd like to make an acknowledgement about the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and Hawaii's COSI program, Island Earth. COSI aims to connect marine science issues with both visitor and local communities, and they help to sponsor the All Things Marine radio show. I'd like to also acknowledge some of our other sponsors, D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, University of Hawaii Federal Credit Union, Hanks Tax Service, Island Cooling and Whole House Fan, Kanalele Ukulele. And I think that's all the sponsors we have for today. I also wanted to thank all of our guests. For more information or to listen to our podcasts, be sure to check out our website, cosi-ie.net. I'd like to give a special thanks to Jeff Davis and all my guests today. I'm Carly Weiner. Thanks for listening. Now get out there and enjoy the ocean planet.